Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Hank. Today I'm putting into use my mom skills as we get ready to celebrate Mother's Day this coming weekend. We're going to be talking about that road and path to motherhood.
I didn't realize you were a mother.
Wife and mother. But I think, you know, it's this time where we start thinking about all those mothers in our life, because I think there's a lot of ways that we mother and there are a lot of ways that we are mothered. And I think fathers mother in a lot of wonderful ways. Because mothering really is about tapping into that feminine energy that we all have, men and women, and tapping into that really deep space of nurturing and caring for and carrying. So I think this is a conversation for all. Anyone who wants to tap into their feminine energy in that side of nurturing each other, their children, the earth, those around them, animals. Because Hank, I know you are naturally very mothering when it comes to your animals, that you have a huge nurturing soft side. And I think you tap into that nurturing mothering side when I come in every week and I'm rushing around madly saying, can you find that song for me? I have to go to the restroom. Can you play with my chair and my lights? It's a lot of mothering to care for those around us. So I think you should honor yourself in some way, too.
Thank you. I'll do that.
And it's an interesting thing about motherhood, because I believe that before I had children of my own, and I'd done a lot of babysitting, and I had spent time when I was young taking care of younger children and playing school with them. So I really assumed all along that there would come a moment, that moment of birth when my child was here in the world, that I would be flooded with all of those emotions and skills and wisdom that I would require to raise my children from birth into launching. And it really didn't go that way. It was surprising to me how much I didn't really leave the hospital, leave the birthing experience with the mothering knowledge or feelings even that I thought would come with that experience. You know, and maybe my birthing experience was really unique to me, or maybe my, you know, road to motherhood was unique to me. But I do know that there was so much focus all 9+ months that I was pregnant on the developing of the baby and going in and getting checks and weight and sizes and to make sure the baby was healthy. But there was really very little conversation about my transformation or the changes I was experiencing, just moving and transitioning from one part of my life where I was, you know, a single woman and then a married woman and caring for my husband or working this out together. But really that transitory space from worrying about my body and myself, my own health, and now growing another human being and giving birth to this human being and caring for them for life, not, you know, just in this moment, but for life. And I wouldn't say that I was woefully unprepared, because I do believe that there are things that we grow into, and I had the basics down. I was very efficient at keeping the baby alive, which is really all that they prepare you for, I think, on the road to motherhood, is how do you keep that baby alive with, you know, diapering and feeding and sleeping, and even all of those conversations are, you know, change with every generation. But I felt ready to do the basics, the caregiving piece. But the part of my own transformation, the way I thought about myself, the way I viewed myself in the world, really was something I wasn't prepared for. You know, I really thought that I would have more innate wisdom or understanding or a sense of calm or peace. You know, I really had this Madonna and child, not the singer, but the spiritual figure Madonna thing, that I was going to have like this glow around me, some beautiful golden glow. And I didn't have it. It was very, I felt very confused. I felt very lost. My mom was very helpful with the basics. But this whole idea of feeling a little disconnected from my role. And I think those first few months, I went out in and out of feeling like I was the babysitter and kind of wait. This was the longest babysitting job I'd ever had. And then I'd have those moments where we'd look each other in the eye that I would feel that real maternal rush. But then I kind of go back to the, I hope you're not expecting a lot from me because I don't really know much. And that kind of ebbed and flowed throughout the experience of raising my daughters. And this is my 29th Mother's Day that I'll be experiencing this coming Sunday. And it's interesting because the whole work of mothering, the knowing and feeling that I was a mother, came in waves. Waves of understanding what my job was in the caregiving part, but then understanding my job when it came to the social emotional piece, and then understanding my place in the planet, my place in culture as a mother, seeing myself as that woman, that nurturer, that feminine energy, and really owning that. That took longer than I expected to really own, to hold that piece. And I can say now that primary job of parenting is done, as my youngest is off in the world and my oldest is married. Now I get it. And that's the most interesting thing, is that now I get that mother piece. I own this. I love that is my role. And even in all the years of raising my children, you know, I always felt like mothering was my primary job and everything else I did was hobby energy. You know, going back and getting my master's and all the work that I did and teaching and all that kind of felt like hobby energy, things I did when I wasn't doing my primary job of mothering. And as I've grown into that role, now I've gotten to a place where I think I really own it. Like I might have a little bit of that glow around me now, a little of that golden glow. And now I don't need it as much. Like I've learned all the skills and the skills have passed me by. So today I'm curious about your journey to motherhood. When did you know you were a mom? Besides the fact of having that human you're responsible for, but when did you really get that sense? What was it that made you feel like, yes, I am a mother? We're going to invite you to join our conversation coming up soon. But I also want to introduce you to my guest today, because I'm not here alone talking about motherhood. I have Mary Sage with me here in the studio. Mary Sage is an empowered birth advocate. She is the president of the Birth and Baby Resource Network, and she's also a proud mama of Meta, who's 5 years old. And she's here today to talk about her experience with motherhood and a bit about the Birth and Baby Resource Network. And to kind of share her wisdom. And we're a few years apart. I think we're about 10 years apart. So we have different generational views of what motherhood looks like, because it has changed. And as I said, we'll open up the phone lines in a bit for your comments and questions, 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can also be part of the conversation through our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. We have a website, and you can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. Mary Sage, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Elizabeth. My pleasure.
All right. So I told everyone a little bit of my story of kind of fits and starts of recognizing my change, my transformation in motherhood. Do you remember those moments when you really knew you were a mother?
It's ebbing and flowing. I have to stay still as she just turned 5. But I do remember when I became pregnant, feeling an extreme shift in, like, I was up to something very important now. Not anything that I knew anything about or what I should be doing, which was shocking at 36 to think that I don't really have any idea what I'm supposed to do. Why had I not had sisters and friends sharing this information with me, and aunties and mom and grandma sharing this information with me? And I was really kind of shocked to feel like, I have no idea what to do now, but I'm up to something significant.
So there was a deep resonating somewhere in you,
mm-hmm.
calling out maybe for wisdom.
Calling out for wisdom.
Yeah.
And like-minded wisdom, because I knew that although my mother had been a nurturing mom, that she didn't necessarily have the information that would align with my belief systems, mm-hmm. and how I would choose to parent a child, even though she did a lot of things really well. I was looking for people who were more in alignment with the way that I saw the world.
So how did you find your way to this place of being an empowered birth advocate and a president of the Birth and Baby Resource Network? How what was your path to these two places?
So I had just moved here to California from Minnesota and became pregnant within, several months. So I was not only just new to the state, new to the area, I didn't know anybody. And so somehow I was lucky enough to find the Birth and Baby Resource Network and was thrilled to show up and hear moms talking about baby wearing and attachment parenting, which I knew nothing about. And so that was the beginning of me tapping into a network that I felt like, okay, these people have really good information. I had been a massage therapist and a yoga instructor and a counselor, and so I always felt like I had that sort of nurturing quality to what I had always been doing, but how to apply it to being a mom mm-hmm. or how to give birth was, it's ironically, kind of a mystery. Having been a massage therapist and I had witnessed several births as a young person, but I was still like, what am I supposed to do here?
We really do not have the traditions of passing that wisdom down. And it's interesting because on one hand we say, well, we should be listening to our wise elders and our grandmothers and our aunts and our sisters and our friends. We should be sharing that information. But quite often I think what's become the norm in our culture is the information that's shared tends to be the horror story sharing, right? This is my horrible birth experience. This is my horrible pregnancy story. Here's how my body shifted and was awful. And here's when no one else, the things that we are sharing generation to generation or person to person or mother to mother, for some reason we're caught in a negative spiral in that information instead of the holding of that sacred information, the beautiful part of the pregnancies and the transformation and the birthing. We don't have a space for really sharing that knowledge.
Right.
And I'm not sure when we lost that because, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years pre-internet where we seemed, for some reason, the internet has become our wise elder, and which is unfortunate in many ways because although we'll tell you that most of the information is actually put in such a way that it's supposed to terrify you because it keeps you coming back or buying products or going to experts, right? The internet really is a capitalistic tool to get us to buy more products. So anything you type in, they're going to say, oh no, you need to go seek help for this. Right. So we've turned to the internet as our wise elder, and we've dismissed the wise elders, the ancient wisdom of the feminine, of mothering. It got lost somewhere along the way. And I don't know how we reclaim that. I don't know how we change that story or that pattern of information transmission that we have in our culture.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. And I think part of what happened, like my mother's generation was part of the first generation that just bought into medicated birth as the way it should be done. So I
don't know if they bought into it, if they were coerced a little bit by doctors.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But so what I knew about my birth was that it was great. She had her medication and I was born and there were no complications. And then she began to bottle feed me almost immediately. And to me, that was like horrific. So I knew when I was pregnant that I wouldn't be necessarily asking my mom what to do. So I think that's part of what has happened in this generational transition of actually not looking to our parents for what we think we want, because there's a lot of women now who are saying, I'd like a more old-fashioned natural birth. Mm-hmm. Go back to the grandmothers
great-grandmothers in some way. Right. And we did a show a few months back talking about the business of being born and how we've shifted just the birth process to a much more medicalized model and not to the benefit of mothers or to children. And I encourage people that haven't seen that documentary to watch it because there is a lot in it. And I do feel that there's been a shift. There was a shift in the 50s when we did move to this medical model and disempowering women about the birth process. And at the same time, we stopped talking about that transition from, you know, woman to mother and what goes on. And then we got lost even more, you know, with the feminist movement and the change in the structure of the family system and the work that women were doing to try to gain equality in the workplace. There was an even greater distancing away from wanting to identify with mothering or birthing, anything that connected to that feminine energy was dismissed a bit. And so we moved further away. But what's more disheartening is between the time of my first child in 1985, when we had a birthing room and a midwife, and it was very all natural and very comfortable, between that and then my daughter's friends who have been having children the last few years, they've regressed back in many ways to the 50s, where many more C-sections, many more medically induced labors or medical interventions, very much that medical model. And my concern is that not only is it difficult for the birthing part, but for the conversation today is how are we helping to nurture women to become mothers? Where do they find the information? How do they find the support and nurturing they need post-birth through the mothering process? Because we seem to have completely dropped that if there is information, it's all around birth and baby. But that period of time is very short. Mm-hmm. And the process of mothering our children is a process of a lifetime of growing into it and knowing about the social emotional changes or discipline or sleep or school choices. And I think the other big setup that I'm concerned about, and I was hoping we'll be able to talk about today, is I think a lot of this focus on postpartum depression and the whole idea that anything women feel postpartum that's not just happy and joyful is a clinical disorder is really a setup for women to feel pathologized or disempowered post-birth healing. And I think part of the struggle with postpartum right now is that we have let women have this fantasy that you can have a child and go back to normal 6 weeks later, go back to your job and drop the baby off as if nothing's changed. Right. And when things do change and you don't feel normal again, because you'll never will feel normal again, you'll feel different. You're a mother. But because you've been told you should go back to normal, when women don't feel joyous or excited or energetic, they feel they're broken.
Right.
And so we're not only slipping in the birth and baby piece, but we've really slipped, I think, in the growing of mothers.
Right.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guest, Mary Sage. She's a local empowered birth advocate, president of the Birth and Baby Resources Network. And the Birth and Baby Resources Network will be sponsoring a fair Saturday, May the 30th from 10 to 3 p.m. that the public is welcome to attend. And I think it's a way to connect with others that have similar interests and concerns and share wisdom. And people can find out more information about this upcoming fair
on the website at bbrn.org or on the Facebook page for bbrn/slow.
And this will take place at the San Luis Obispo Veterans Hall on Saturday, May the 23rd. Mary's my guest today, and we're talking about when we knew we were mothers, and what does it take to grow into that role of mother? And we're happy to take your calls, 805-781-3875. Where did you learn your mothering wisdom? Or do you feel like you're searching for that mothering wisdom? How do we go about passing on the ancient wisdom of child rearing when we have such varying generational beliefs on what child rearing looks like? Again, your calls are welcome, 805-781-3875. So where do you find your mothering wisdom for a five-year-old?
Right. I think it's really important to seek out groups and connections with people who you really believe in how they're showing up as a mother, as a parent, as a person in the community. So I've been really selective to choose who I spend my time with as a mother and look to who seems to have quality information, like some of the doulas in the community who have been doing this for a long time, the midwives, people who align more with natural birth or support that sort of empowered, health-oriented state of being. So aligning with people in the yoga community, people who are advocates for nutrition, and then just learning and growing a really nice circle of sisters and brothers who...
Yes, I'm very much about empowering our fathers to touch mm-hmm. their mothering sides, because I do feel like mothering is a feminine piece of our lives. Mm-hmm. It's that feminine energy, that ability to care for and nurture others, although we're focused on mothers and because Mother's Day is coming on mm-hmm. Sunday. But you know, you talk about aligning with those people that match your value system, but I think then what about the moms who are finding out all their information from, you know, the internet? Because there's a lot of compelling research that says, you know, go this direction, that the medical model is safe, or, you know, how to raise your children in different discipline. And there's, you know, for years and years we talked about timeouts, and now we're talking mm-hmm. about time ins. And mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. I'm, you know, at the other end of the spectrum down the road, I feel like I have so much to offer now. But right off the bat with a lot of new moms, if I say, you know, we talk about, you and I had talked earlier about co-sleeping mm-hmm. and that's very important to you and for a lot of mothers of this generation. But then for my perspective, I don't think I would have slept for right. the first 6 months if I hadn't had a little space. And so that, you know, when our child rearing practices don't align, then we dismiss all of the other wisdom or the right. support. And I always am concerned that if we're getting all of our information from people who are parenting children of the same age, in ways it's like getting sex education information from a fifth grader when you're a third grader. And exactly. they really don't have life experience. And so I'm always wondering, how do we find the grandmother wisdom or that I just keep going back to the ancient feminine, the things that have worked for generation to generation, and support each other and mothers in that way. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Anne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to make a comment, and you said, when did you know that you had the maternal instinct?
Yes.
And I think it was like in my teenage years from babysitting and watching my parents be good role models. And later I had two children who are now married with children, and I got to have them both with a midwife at home, unmedicated. I nursed one for 20 months and one for 4.5 years, and I loved the whole experience. Now I'm a grandma.
But, Anne, how did you know to have the natural birth? How did you know, you know, to breastfeed? How did you learn those skills, and how did you know to ask for those things?
That's interesting. I had a Bradley instructor at the time that recommended me to a real holistic pediatrician. My father's a chiropractor, so I was raised kind mm-hmm. of in that naturalistic mm-hmm. way. And I just accidentally met my midwife at a store, actually, while we were shopping, mm-hmm. and we just hit it off. And it just seemed like the natural, normal thing to do, like you said, kind of went back to the grandmother's days, and I just wanted to be as natural as possible.
So what would you recommend, because you have the wisdom, you're the sage grandmother now, how do you imagine spreading that warmth and wisdom to other moms who are not getting, don't have a chiropractor father or a tap into the natural bent on things, you know, women who are getting their information from the internet or from the media? How do you imagine being able to tap into them and share what you know?
Right. I think that though I was young, I was 18 when I had my first and 20 when I had my second. I'm now 50 with 3 grandchildren. I mm. think just reading, like you said, sharing and being on programs like this, it just spread the message that, yes, there's different ways. There's alternative birthing centers. For me, I think I just was of the mindset that I got from a book, I'm sure, or from another sage, as you said, that childbirth is the next normal thing to, for instance, using the restroom. It's not to be medically induced or timed or interfered with, if you will. And if you look at an animal, I think I learned it from Bradley, mm-hmm. the animal, the cat, for example, will go under a freezer or a large appliance and shun themselves from the world and make their little nest. And they'll just, like, between contractions be as if they're sleeping. And I just had that model in my mind that that's what I wanted. And my birthing experiences were wonderful, and my nursing, too.
Well, I'm so glad you shared that with us. And I also would encourage you, because I just keep having this vision of, and I think it's a term that Mary used, are the sister moms, you know, creating a network of sister moms, of the wise elders, of those who have the feminine energy, to reach out and try to somehow connect with all of the young moms that are out there trying to figure it out on their own. Because I think there is this real attitude of, you know, every generation will figure it out, or I don't want to interfere, or we shouldn't, you know, impose ourselves. But I remember as a young mom myself feeling very confused and kind of alone and lost. And I know my mom wanted to help, but I'd been so conditioned by others to discount my mom's advice, mm-hmm. right? Because it didn't align with, and so I lost the one person who might have been actually able to support me, because I had been told, don't listen to your grandma or your old people, because they don't. So you and I have to figure out a way to share what we know.
Yeah, very good. I think that, like, your show, when I heard it was on mothering, I thought of my daughter who has two, and I'm like, I want to call her and have her listen. At the same time, you know, she looks at my mothering skills and she sees what she does now as things that I did, and she thinks it's funny. And, like, I didn't put them in preschool. I wanted them to be at home with me. I was able to be with them until they were five, and I just wanted that old, kind of like the pioneer days. I wanted to turn back the time and kind of be like on the prairie and midwives and, like you said, aunties and sisters and people there to support you. Kind of like a more, I guess it would be more American tribal, and my mindset is more old world.
Thank you so much, Anna. I appreciate your wisdom and your time calling in. So, Mary, what do you think? Is this what you're looking for?
I think that's perfect. I love what Anne had to say about it. And she was talking about the tribal ways, and it reminds me of the distinction that there between the Native American tradition of the blessing way ceremony, which you may or may not be familiar with, but it's this beautiful ceremony where the women of the community come together to support the pregnant woman and share their wisdom and bless her and soak her feet in rose water and give her notes about birthing, and just more of like a celebration of the sacredness of birthing and that passing down of wisdom versus what we see more now, which is a baby shower full of, like, you know, obnoxious cakes and tons of onesies that you probably won't ever need that many onesies, and gifts, and you've got to have the best diaper bag, and you've got to have the best, right, you've got to have the best baby wearing devices for all days of the week. Mm-hmm. And you know, that what having a child is about is having this huge registry of stuff that you need to buy and then decisions you need to make, you know, based on what might go wrong.
And I think that's, again, we focus so much on the development of the baby and what the baby needs that we forget that the real growth and transformation, I mean, another part of the growth is into motherhood.
Right.
And that this idea, and I love this idea of the blessing way, of having a mothering ceremony.
Exactly.
To encourage people to not just have a baby shower for presents. It's like focusing on the bachelorette party instead of on the transformation into being a couple and premarital counseling. It's kind of that same way, is that we have to have some sort of initiation into motherhood to share that wisdom and to reframe our story.
Exactly.
I don't know why we're in this habit of sharing horror stories instead of looking for and sharing the story of beauty. And I think it's one of the things I like about the hypnobirthing movement, because it's about, you know, seeing and aligning with and creating the birth experience you want to have in a positive, beautiful way to help make that happen. And I think that was the old Bradley method that Anne was talking about and that I followed when I had my children. And I still give the Bradley book original edition because it's so patriarchal and beautiful for men to read to understand their piece. I mean, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Lalasha, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I'm younger. I just had my fourth and final child this last October. I started having kids almost 9 years ago now. And I've had natural birth. And how I found out about this, or didn't really find out about it as much as it was, like, the idea of a cesarean section never even crossed my mind, because everybody in my family had that I had known up until that point had had just regular vaginal birth. So I knew that I wanted to do that, but when I was doing my like intake interview for my when I was pregnant with my first daughter, they were like, "Well, do you want a midwife or do you want an OBGYN?" And so I asked what the difference was, and they were like, "Well, the OB is trained in surgery." And I was like, "Well, I don't need a surgeon because I'm not having surgery. I'm having a baby." Mm-hmm. And so that's what got me onto the path of a more holistic, although, like, I don't love to use that term. I just like to say just natural birth or birth as we know it, because humans wouldn't be around if we needed to have our babies extracted from us for millennia. We persist because that's how babies are supposed to come out, unless there is different overriding circumstances.
And I think we've gotten to a point where we've been given the impression that there are many more medical emergencies in birth than there actually are, right? That we've been told that it's an emergency when really the emergencies are small. And I'm curious, Alasha, so you've been a mother now for 9 years, and at what point did you start to really feel that you were a mother, feel that mothering role that you live?
When I taught my first daughter to potty train, I was like, yes, I am a mom. This is the first thing that I have done, like, as a mother. Because, I mean, my body made milk on its own. I, unfortunately, with my first birth, did not, like, know about induction and how not awesome that could be. So I did have an induction at 41 weeks, 5 days with her. I did not have any other medical induction with my other three births after that because it's unpleasant.
And so at the potty training piece, at the potty training piece, you felt like you'd brought your own wisdom to the role of motherhood and made it happen. And where do you get your mothering wisdom? Where do you go to for support and resources?
I have a really awesome mom. She you know, believes that children are children and they go through phases and, you know, some things are just part of their age, not a disorder to be diagnosed and medicated. You know, three-year-olds are mousy and they're hyper. That doesn't mean that they have ADD or that, you know, they have that disorder that, like, Soviet Union babies have from not being attended to. Mm-hmm. Like
attachment disorders.
Yeah, like, they're three. They're just three, and that's okay, and you'll get through it, and it'll pass, and another thing will come along.
So you have a mom that you could turn to for guidance and wisdom. And Alasha, thank you for calling in. I think that's what we're just talking about today is, one, honoring all those mothers who have that wisdom, who have paved the way, and wanting to find out from you, when did you know you were a mom? What was that moment, or when were those moments along the way where you really said, gosh, I am a mom. I know what this feels like. And where do you go to for your mother wisdom, for your mother support? Mm-hmm. And are you searching for that? 805-781-3875. My guest today, Mary Sage, is an empowered birth advocate and president of the Birth and Baby Resource Network and also a proud mama. And she and I are kind of grappling with this idea of how do we bridge wisdom with modern information? You know, do the babies sleep on their back or their side or their stomach? That changes every generation. And so if grandma doesn't have the same idea about babies' stomach, side, or back, then all of a sudden everything the grandma says is discounted. Right. So how do we balance that information, you know, and the idea of pacifiers, versus non-pacifiers. And it's interesting now, 29 years later, to look back and see all the fads of parenting, right. You know, the things that everyone thought you had to have in order for your child to succeed, whether it was, you know, the right kind of stroller or the right kind of sleeping or baby food controversy. There's so many shiny objects when it comes to the world of parenting. How do we know what to trust?
Right.
Exactly. I think one of the things that is really important is to focus on communicating the good information and being supportive of women with a more compassionate communication. Like, we've gotten into the habit of being so critical of one another and so judgmental and so hard on one another that it's just really disheartening. And how can we start to be more conscious of how we're communicating the good information and sharing the good information, the good resources with one another, and helping to shore women up who might need some support by offering more positive communication and feedback instead of just being in that real critical mind?
Well, and I do remember when my first daughter was born, one of the most helpful experiences I had was with a lactation consultant.
Yes.
And just having that warmth and that caring and teaching that simple skill that you think, I should know how to do this. I'm a mom and all the pieces are there. But it just struck me how important it was to have that doula-esque or that guiding influence. And she was older and it felt safe and it felt right. And I just, I feel so, again, so frustrated because so much of the information is being fed to young moms through the medical model, which which pathologizes everything.
Right.
And I think what Alasha was saying is sometimes, you know, when our grandmothers or our wise elders or moms who have, you know, 20-year-olds versus 5-year-olds will say, now, you know, looking back on my child, I wish I hadn't jumped in and decided they were hyper because the teacher said so. I wish I hadn't jumped in and, you know, felt like I needed to feed my child this or take them, you know, to the doctor for these things. I wish I had just trusted the process of the child growing and know that the child will change and grow and change and grow. But we don't support that inner wisdom, that gut instinct that moms have. We've taken that away from them and said, no, don't trust your gut instinct. Go to the doctor or go to a therapist or go to some other professional or buy this item. I just keep going back to the purchasing of all these things for babies that really in so many ways are so unnecessary because they outgrow them so quickly and you've spent all this money. And it's really, you know, like a special, and not to be mean to the moms who have this, but a special blanket that says tummy time on it. We just used to lay the babies on the grass, right? And it's like you're being sold things that take your mind, your focus away from your own gut instinct of what your child needs. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Mary Sage, and we're taking your calls, 805-781-3875. Where did you learn your mothering wisdom? Are you searching for mothering wisdom and mentors, or are you a mentor? And what do you think about this upcoming Mother's Day and how we can best nurture and love those who are the mothers in our lives? Sarah, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just responding to your question about how did you know when you became a mother, when you had that instinct. I have 2 kids, 8 and 5, and I'll have to say the first moment I realized it was when my 8-year-old went to kindergarten, and not long after that, there was the Sandy Hook shooting, and I was at work, and I just went into the bathroom and just cried for about 2 hours because I realized at that moment that he was out doing his part in the world, and part of me was out there, and there's only, we weren't supposed to be together forever, and part of him growing up was being on his own out in the world, and we just do our best we can when we're together and keep them safe, but they have to go out and do their own thing too, so...
That's beautifully said. And it's almost like in that moment of separation, you realized how connected you were as a mother.
Yes, absolutely.
Beautifully said. Thank you for calling, Sarah.
Thank you.
And Carol, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Elizabeth and Mary Sage. I was going to just share, I was a mom early too, and in the 60s. And I was very fortunate because I was in like a low cost housing where there were a lot of mothers that had a lot of experience. I mean, they had a bunch of kids, and I was new to being a mother, and they helped me a lot with, you know, little practical things like what do they do when the baby got diaper rash and you know, things like that. And I really like what Mary Sage had to say about finding other mothers that have similar ideas about what they want to do in parenting and mothering, because that's very important. And I also want to say that I think it's really important for experienced moms to acknowledge the new mothers when they're showing good parenting decisions and actions.
And I'm so glad you said that, Carol, because I think about that often when I'm in the store, in the park, or traveling around, and I don't know if it's my innate mothering or feminine energy or the therapist in me, but I always go over and tell the moms, you're doing such a great job, or, you know, hang in there, or it looks like you really have it together, or, you know, if there's a tantrum happening, I'll walk over and say, this too shall pass, you know, you're doing great. And I think that we need to do that. If we don't, as mentor moms, reach out and make the connection, that we are missing part of our job as mothers on the planet, which is passing on what we do know.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming.
I also wanted to say that, I was a single mom, and so when I got to the point where I had that responsibility totally for me, I saw that my father's way of parenting and my mother's way of parenting wasn't working, because I tried them both. And so I started taking parenting classes that really helped me see another way of operating.
Thank you, Carol. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to mention that, you know, there are some things that mothers need to develop to find those skills of motherhood. You know, unless for some reason you were born with those innate skills that I was not blessed with when my children were born, because as I said at the top of the show, I was so disappointed after I'd given birth, and it was the most beautiful experience, this empowering thing. I thought, I can do anything if I can birth a baby. But I was not overcome or washed with the innate wisdom I thought I would have. And so what I've learned over the years, over my 29 years, that there are really three important things that women need to develop in order to find their wholeness as mothers. And the first is personal values. You need to work on and develop your own set of personal values and belief system that you are going to use as a model for raising your child. You know, what are the morals? What are the beliefs? What are the skills and gifts you want to pass on to your child? You need to really think about those through the years, through the months of your pregnancy, and through those early years of raising your child, to really think about, in these short 18 years I have, what is everything I need to pass on to this child, and to be conscious in those choices. So that will help you to understand when to discipline, what kind of activities your child should be doing, when you should, you know, engage them in learning new skills. So a set of personal values is important to begin setting up the context of mothering. The second one is a child development class. If you didn't take it in college, I think every mother should take a child development class. You know, we take the birthing classes to learn the basics of tending to a newborn, but we don't do any follow-up about what should we expect when our child's 2 or 3 or 6 or 7, what's normal development, because I think that would really eliminate a lot of the unnecessary diagnosis and pathologizing and trips to the therapist that parents are doing way too much right now with their children, because so many of the childhood behaviors really do pass, and by the time we figure them out, it's over, or they're on to the next thing. And really, our children respond to our reactions, right? So if we normalize their behavior, if we don't panic when our child has a tantrum, if we don't panic when our child starts feeling anxious, if we don't panic when our child has trouble in class settling down, if we don't panic and we actually work with our child's skills or their challenges, they'll settle down and find their way. But when parents overreact and get anxious, their child begins to respond to that. So to take a child development class through your junior college online, that's a great use of an online course, understand child development. And the third one is to find mentors who know about parenting, because as great as your mother groups are for support in the day-to-day, someone to share babysitting with, someone to, you know, share recipes with, you need someone who's seasoned. You need a mentor that you can follow, to turn to. If it wasn't your own mother, to find other mothers and to be active in that. And I don't think we encourage women to reach out and look for that. We say, you know what, everything you need is online or it's in this book. But really, the one-on-one with another mother is critical for developing the skills you need to really fall into your mothering space. Do you have anything to add to that, Mary?
I think it's really important to connect with a great group. We have an example of that locally with a seasoned doula who has a Facebook group that she has where she's very mindful about watching the conversations to make sure there's not a lot of judgment or criticism, but also really like providing supportive information for what women are going through. And then other women are commenting in as well, saying, I had that too. Here's what worked really well for me. But the intention with this group is to make it a really positive and supportive environment.
And what's the Facebook page?
That group is called the Holistic Mama and Papas, and Jennifer Stover's the leader of it. She's got a huge, wonderful group and does park dates in all areas of the community and is always available to help women with breastfeeding or sleeping issues. It's amazing.
If you'd like to be part of this conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX, and A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Val, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Great. Thanks for having me. I missed quite a bit at the beginning, but I heard enough that I wanted to put in. I had my children just, my first child was over 30 years ago, and I actually did have both my kids at home. I'm trying to think, and I was very novice. I lived way out. I couldn't see a house from where I lived. I was in the country. And I did things like I asked a friend, how often should I change the diapers? She just said, well, whenever they're wet. You know, that's how it's like. I don't know what I'm doing. But I did. It seemed to come to me when I first started breastfeeding. I guess earlier you were saying, when did you first feel like you were a mom?
Yes, you kind of got it.
Pardon me?
When did you first kind of get that feeling, yes?
Yeah, probably, you know, right at birth and when my child started breastfeeding. What was interesting, though, my two kids were very different after birth and how well they attached and acclimated. One thing I do remember is, I'm trying to remember, it's a while ago, Dr. Spock. I mean, Dr. Spock, the book, was my buddy. And I learned an awful lot and an awful lot of good advice. I don't know what it would be like nowadays with so much stuff online and you know, on TV and everything. And you mentioned before, you don't need stuff for babies. You can put them in a drawer for a bassinet, you know, and just a towel, you know, just throw something on the ground and just, I don't know, there's just, to me, I guess mothering and parenting is just it's easier in some ways than we think.
I don't know.
Kind of tell us, you know, like you were saying, if you don't do it this way, if you don't have this product, you're not doing it right. And again, to try to trust your instincts. Like I said, my mother was not had passed away, and my father long before I was married. My mother-in-law had kind of a different philosophy than I. And one thing, I breastfed at will.
Well, and I think that's, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off because I have so many calls, and I'm sorry to do that to you, Betty and Val. But I want to move forward because I think that, you know, how we find that wisdom and how we figure it out. She talked about Dr. Spock, and I think Dr. Bradley, and like every generation seems to have their go-to doctor and physician. And that's where I kind of get caught up also, is that how do we, you know, siphon out the information that's helpful, and how do we kind of let go of the noise that's really just making us more anxious when it comes to parenting?
Right.
And I think that's, you know, you and I are a generation apart also, and the different things that we've been told about co-sleeping or how the baby sleeps, but also about the child-rearing part. How do we trust our instincts to know that things are going to be okay?
Right. And how do we learn to manage our own stresses in a better way? Parents are so stressed out these days, and how can we kind of dial that down a notch by becoming more connected in our communities or sharing our resources or developing that sense of a tribe that you've got a tight-knit community that you trust and you grow with and you could drop the kids off if you needed to.
Right. I think having those backup people, you know, what saved my life with both of my children were my girlfriends I had who had children the same age, and we were each other's drop-off space.
Yes.
You know, I need a day or I need an hour or I need a weekend, and you have that those people that you can trust to help you with the process. And you talked a lot about the competitiveness and, you know, that criticalness that we have for each other and how, you know, I don't know how we got into this negative spiral. Everything's a competition where we want to have the prettiest baby or the best baby, or we have the best gizmos or gadgets, and we've lost sight. It's kind of the same way we've done with weddings and and showers. It's all a competition instead of really remembering the essence is that we're raising a human being.
Right.
And at that part, you know, I look at other young moms who are so busy trying to do so much at the same time and try to pack it all in. I think, gosh, you know, if I can tell you anything 29 years later, is that I wouldn't have changed a thing. I would have done less work. I only worked 10 hours a week. I would have done less. I would have stayed and smelled their hair every day.
Right.
You know, because no matter how many times as older moms we say, it goes over, it's done before you know it. And you think you're wasting your life or you're missing out on things, but you're not. Because at 55, you still have 30 years to do things. So if you have your children at 25, just have your children.
Right.
But I think the cultural message is so confusing that women feel pressured to compete and do better and try to win and do the most. And I'm not sure who they're trying to win or do the most for. Liz, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, my children now are 50 and 47. And even back then, there was a difference in philosophy. My first child, my son, was born in a teaching hospital in Rochester, New York. Well, I knew nothing about midwives and stuff like that. But both of my OBGYNs were willing to go with medical-free births. And I got my information mostly from my sister-in-law, who's 10 years older, and she gave me a book about a commune in Tennessee, which I completely do not remember the name. But most of it, and there was a whole big section on childbirth, and that really helped me a lot. And then after my children were born, Dr. Spock was my Bible.
And
he said, trust your instincts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's unfortunate that it was revolutionary, that, you know, that you had to go and find this information kind of on the sly from your sister-in-law and it was happening on a commune. I mean, the fact that the most natural thing we do, which is giving birth and raising children, that our instincts are there if we can tune into them, that somehow that's become subversive, that isn't the first information we get. The first information we get is all about the medical intervention and about the pathologizing and about the, you know, postpartum depressions. We talk about all of the ways things can go poorly instead of the first thing we hear is all of the natural pieces. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing.
There's a beautiful film called The Milky Way, and it's about breastfeeding and kind of what's going on with breastfeeding around the world, and particularly looking at the United States and what's really not going very well here as far as what we're doing. But then there's this beautiful comparison to this hospital in Germany that was one of the first baby-friendly hospitals and kind of set the model for that, which some of our local hospitals are working towards or have been. And one of the neat things that they share about is their philosophy in the hospital is to, the most important thing is to teach the woman who's just become a mother that she knows best, that to trust herself, that she actually knows more what the baby needs than the doctor does. And they just begin by instilling that idea and then supporting her to drop into that intuition and knowingness and the wisdom.
It seems that that's probably the model we need to really look for here in our individual communities, is setting up a mothering center. You know, we have birthing centers, we have play groups for the birth and baby moments, but to have a mothering center where you can drop in and hang out and share information and pass clothes back and forth mm-hmm. and kind of meet up. And everything. I don't know how that supports itself, but there might be, you know, a nurse on staff to ask questions to. Mm-hmm. And what a beautiful thing if we had like a drop-in clinic for mothering and it could be staffed. Because I remember when my daughter was young, and I don't know if it's still here, but we went to a place called Grandmother's House. And it was a little preschool for 18-month-olds and older. And she was just one day a week on Wednesday for 3 hours. And it was just enough time for me to get my sanity back every week, you know, to have right. that one day. But it was all grandmas. Mm. And just that loving place. And I keep thinking, you know, that's where we need to start working from is we need to have mothering initiations. Mm-hmm. We need to, if you don't, you know, when you go to have a shower, that's lovely. But then that evening, have a mothering ceremony with mm-hmm. all of the women who right. are mothers in your community and ask them to come with wisdom. You know how we do the recipe cards for new marrieds? Mm-hmm. Let's have a recipe box of little mothering tips and hints, things that worked right. for you, and give those as gifts. And exactly. our phone numbers for the middle of the night. You know, I tell all of my young moms that are in, you know, that I'm looking out for. I feel like I'm looking out for Courtney and Summer and Barrett and Kelly, just all these women. Call me anytime, middle mm-hmm. of the night, I will be there on the phone with you. Mm-hmm. I'll come over because my life is easy to go back to. I can go back to sleep. I'm missing a couple hours. It doesn't matter. Your life every day is full of this responsibility. Right. So call me
right.
and just use me what you need for that time because it'll make me feel like I've done something and give you some respite. Betsy, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
I was just responding to your question about when I knew I was a mother, and
yes.
I kind of brought to my mind this moment. I was in Vaughn's, an elevator, and I saw this kid with a broken arm, like teenage kid, and I'm like, oh, you know, you poor thing. I just had this outpouring of compassion, and my kid must have been old enough to realize that was really embarrassing for him because he said something like that. But that's kind of just how I feel like I really grew into being a mother, was just exercising that compassion muscle, and it has allowed me to have so much of a connection with my son. And when I, you know, it's almost shocking to me when I hear him say things like, oh, you know, Mom, that he is proud of me or he loves me or something affirmative toward me, but I know that it's really based in that connection that, you know, I have, you know, allowed him to feel unconditionally loved by me and that he has a supportive place to come from in me. And it's just been really nice. Now he's 12, and to hear that come back from him is really affirming.
You've nurtured his mothering instincts as well.
yeah, so thank you.
Happy Mother's Day, Betsy. And so when did you know you were a mother? When was one of those moments?
Oh, geez, good question. I remember just having this really funny experience of holding my newborn and actually wondering to myself if it was okay to kiss her on the lips. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, why does this feel so uncomfortable? And then just kind of recognizing and being able to kind of laugh compassionately with myself and say, yeah, I think it's okay if I kiss my baby on the lips.
You get to give yourself permission because you are the mom.
Yep.
Because
exactly.
I am the mom.
Because I am the mom.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I thank my guest, Mary Sage, for coming in today. And if you're interested in the birth and baby fair, it's Saturday, May the 23rd from 10 to 3 at the Veterans Hall in San Luis Obispo. More information at bbrnslo@gmail.com. Thank you, as always, for being a part of our program. You can hear previous shows at kcbx.org or on our Facebook page. We go out today with a gift from Peter Gabriel. The song is Shaking the Tree. Happy Mother's Day to all of you out there.